Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, it's Matt Wells, back with another Media Talk. In the week that a judge described the Jeremy Kyle show as human bear-baiting, we ask a psychiatrist about the impact on participants. I'll be reporting from the Oxfordshire residence of Sir Richard Branson as he shows off his shiny new channel, Virgin One. And we'll be looking at how word is getting out to the world about the so-called saffron revolution in Burma. The podcast panel this week is comprised of broadcasting consultant Steve Hewlett. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
And editor-in-chief of Media Guardian, Janine Gibson. How are you, Janine?
I'm well, thank you, Matt.
Thank you for standing in for me last week, so ably. Let's start with the big news story of the week, which of course is the popular unrest in Burma, a protest led by the burgundy-clad monks. It's been a tricky story to report because the Burmese regime doesn't tolerate independent media, and they won't let foreign journalists in either. Many pictures and videos have made it to the outside world through clandestine means, and the Times of London on Friday was able to print a first-person dispatch from one of its journalists who had made it in under the wire. Tin Tan Shui is head of the Burmese section of the BBC World Service.
We are getting story out from various sources. Well, we do not have correspondents inside the country. However, we are getting news from the citizen. In a sense, we are getting citizen journalism. We are getting people contacting us. And also, I can give you a good example. Only a few days ago, an elderly woman on the phone to her son describing about the attacks, and the son recorded her and then sent it to the BBC. And until this morning, the telephone lines were still working. So we could phone people up, we could check the stories, we could verify the stories. And also photos, we received a number of photos from the blocks from Burma. Of course, today the internet has stopped functioning.
And we're recording this on Friday when the government has indeed started to crack down on all of this. And are your contacts in Burma putting themselves at risk when they're sending you this information?
There must be some degree of risk, but I'm sure they know that if it is not safe, they wouldn't contact us. So there must be somehow they feel that they are safe enough. There is less risk for them to contact to the BBC. And besides, people would like the BBC to know what is happening. They feel that we are the most trusted media in the region.
Hmm.
Some people may take a considerable risk, but most people, they know that how far they can go.
And do you know how many listeners you have in Burma? Because, of course, in other countries like China, the authorities jam the BBC World Service. Can people pick it up in Burma?
They can indeed. We managed to do surveys, but 2 years ago, when we interviewed the people, these were the people who were not afraid to talk to us. So the figure we came up at that time, over 7 million week.
And you talk about how your listeners and users trust the BBC, but isn't it difficult to get corroboration and balance into your stories because of the difficulties in reporting from inside the country?
We have always tried to reach the officials. Very seldom that they would talk to us, but we could get access to the police chief. It's not that we never ever had any access to the officials. And also, when there are like ASEAN meetings, we could get access to the ministers.
Isn't it quite dangerous, in fact, in reporting the story of these protests that you're seen as actually campaigning in favour of them?
Campaigning in favour of...
Of the protesters.
You mean the BBC or...?
Yes. That is a danger, isn't it? that you might be accused of supporting the protesters.
We just report what is happening in the country.
Hmm.
So we would use anything to make sure that the story is right. And that is why people are they trust the BBC. It came out in the surveys we did over and over. Why do you listen to BBC? They said, because we trust the BBC.
That was the head of the Burmese service of the World Service there. Steve Hewlett, it's interesting how information is sort of trickling out, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, and it's stating the obvious, and lots of other people have said it, you know, but the mobile phones and the internet and all the rest of it is making such a big difference. And it's that makes this uprising quite different to ones that went before, because the regime are clearly aware that they can be seen and heard. Interestingly, as a bit of a sideline, the BBC have got no correspondents in Rangoon except for one, the British ambassador to Rangoon appears to have become a correspondent. He's on virtually every programme. He's a great interviewee. He appears to know, I see another career beckoning for the British ambassador to Rangoon.
God bless the diplomatic service.
Yes, give that man a contract. And there's more on this story, of course, at guardian.co.uk. Now, I don't suppose that lawyers and judges spend much time watching The Jeremy Kyle Show, but this week it was the centre of attention in a Manchester court. Security guard David Staniforth was fined £300 for headbutting bus driver Larry Mahoney, who'd had an affair with his wife. The district judge, Alan Berg, described the show as human bear-baiting and said the producers should have been in the dock as well. I asked psychiatrist Martin Lloyd-Elliott what he thought.
The consequences of putting vulnerable people onto live chat shows is that you expose them to what I judge to actually be abusive situations. They're often easily manipulated. They are longing to be heard and borne witness to, which is what they're kind of promised, that they'll have a chance to speak up and speak their truth. And sometimes they're told they can set the record straight. But I judge what actually happens is that they are humiliated and shamed and encouraged to go into a descent of out-of-control feelings and to react rather than to think clearly and calmly.
And are there long-term consequences after the initial recording or broadcast of an event like this?
I think that the consequences can be truly dreadful for people. When you're saying something in the heat of passion, when you're in your emotions, often driven by fear or anger, you may say things that afterwards cannot be undone and that you live with forever in terms of regret. Terrible hurts, long-term consequences include causing rifts in families that seem irreconcilable, having said things which in turn lead to the breakup of marriage or the breakdown in relationship that are irrecoverable. And I think people are positively baited into descending into the worst parts of themselves for the pure delight of the audience. It's really horrifying.
Well, indeed, the judge said it was human bear baiting. And we've heard reports since that producers before the show talk up the participants separately. Often they might spread misinformation between the different participants about what they're all going to say about each other. Of course, they're all separated beforehand. And that presumably is done to make the participants more angry, and that seems a terribly cruel thing to do.
It is an incredibly cruel thing to do.
What would be your advice to executives at ITV now that they know what goes on shows like the Jeremy Kyle Show?
They've always known, and I would challenge them to look themselves in the mirror, take a long, hard look, and ask themselves why they've lost touch with their souls and their humanity, and have they any integrity and self-respect? And if they have, then they should stop making these programmes that utterly abuse innocent victims.
Martin Lloyd-Elliott, thanks very much. So human bear-baiting, Janine Gibson, do you think that's a fair description?
Do you know, it's a good week for the establishment. And that might seem like a sideways way into this, but you know, first we have an ambassador proving himself to be a really accomplished broadcaster and a genuine purpose to society. And now the old High Court judges, who most of the time we're all in despair, and every so often they coin something and they put it so perfectly that it just sums up the entire issue. And human bear baiting is just one of those phrases. You just want to say hats off.
There's been some quite nasty stuff sullying the ITV brand recently, hasn't there, Steve Hewlett? You've had ITV Play, which they finally dragged off the air. You've got the Jeremy Kyle Show, which, because nobody ever watches, nobody in the sort of broadcasting elite or the media establishment in London, nobody watches it. People haven't noticed it, but now, of course, they do. And then there's the GMTV thing as well. I mean, do you think there's an issue here for ITV?
Well, I think if they're not careful, that there will be one. I mean, just on the Jeremy Kyle Show, the other word I thought that the judge used, which I thought summed it up really, was trash. And he didn't mean the participants, for once, I think. Yeah. I mean, the other thing about Jeremy Kyle Show, and I have to admit, I have on occasion watched it.
Well, I thought you were going to say you have on occasion been on it.
No, I haven't. Well, only in Mufti, you understand.
He's the one behind the screen.
I'm the lie detector. That's right. Yeah. No, but the thing about the Jeremy Kyle Show is the attitude of Jeremy Kyle. I mean, Jerry Springer, you know, has been running a show like this in the States and not just getting away with it with some pretty extreme stuff. But if you sit Jerry Springer down and say, OK, Jerry, this is clearly an outrage to public decency, he'll give you a perfectly respectable, very well thought through, intellectually moderately watertight justification for what he does and how it happens. And if you look at the way he manages his show, right, he doesn't really get involved. Mm. Now, Jeremy Kyle, meanwhile, is really, really unpleasant. This get off my stage, this is like the Star Chamber. And actually, it's not just that people are having their arguments in public. You can look at that from outside and think, oh dear, how dare they, you know, trashy trailer, you know, white sort of thing. But actually, that's not in itself. That's about it. The way the show orchestrates it and the way that he plays a role in it leaves a really, really bad taste.
And the reports that have been coming out, Janine, this week from producers and former producers about how they talk up the guests and they wind them all up beforehand and in effect let them loose. I mean, that's pretty nasty stuff, isn't it? It's pretty cruel.
It is cruel. It is bear baiting. And the only thing, really, the thing that amazes me is that people are amazed by it. Mm. This is not a new show. This has been going. It's a bit like, do you remember when Andy Allen, who's an old lag of ITV,
My predecessor at Carlton,
Steve. I think he once had to spend a week at a health farm. Probably, I don't know, maybe gout. But it was the good old days of ITV.
Related.
Yeah. And he then stood up at a television conference, you know, a few weeks later, and famously said, "Do you know, daytime television, it's rubbish." And everybody went, "Is it?" Like this had been going on in some sort of undeclared republic somewhere. And Jeremy Carl, I used to listen to him as Jezza's late night confessions on Virgin.
Virgin.
Well, they probably bought it at Capital. Yes. Where some poor woman would ring up and say, "My boyfriend's done me wrong." And he'd say, "Well, you're probably a fat, lazy bitch, aren't you?" And I would sit there going, "Is this a joke? Is this some sort of parody?"
Well, the thing is, of course, is that it isn't a joke, isn't it, Stephen? These are real people, and in many cases, one assumes quite vulnerable people.
I mean, the thing is, you know, they're, on one hand, you have the kind of television confessional, and I'm not in all circumstances opposed to that, you know, far from it. But this is, I mean, whenever you watch it, it's very, very difficult to avoid the feeling that these people are being exploited for the purpose of generating a show which has got more. Certainly generates more light than heat. Mm. Sorry, more heat than light. And interestingly, compare it to even Tricia. Tricia Goddard, you know, is talking about similar issues with similar sorts of people. It can be just as feisty, but it has an altogether. Just it feels.
Trisha's
better.
On their side. Trisha, bless her. I mean, you know, she has training. She is a proper. I don't know if it's a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist or something. Mm. But you know, she's not TV's Dr. Gillian McKeith. She has qualifications and she knows what she's doing. I mean, it is coming to something when you're sitting here and going, "Well, the thing about Jerry Springer and Tricia is at least they're the respectable end of this."
Respectable of this genre. End of bear baiting. Yes.
Do you think that Steve, that there's that ITV?
They feed the bears.
Do you think ITV will have to bow to pressure and do something about this and get rid of this show, do you think, or is that the sort of thing that they can ignore pressure from that because they can just say it's the metropolitan elite and lots of people like it and enjoy it?
Well, I think that they can ignore it up to a point. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where an incident like this will occur at some point in the future and it'll be the kind of straw that breaks the camel's back. So they probably don't have to act on this now. Jeremy Kyle, they maybe have to turn it down a bit, maybe have to kind of, you know, a few careful words with producers, sort of adjust tempo a bit. Mm. But, you know, this will happen again. People are all eyes for it now. You know, the press are looking at it. You know, people are now going to start watching it for yet more evidence that it is, in fact, bear baiting. Some participants will no doubt break cover and start saying they've been treated badly. Once that starts, this could unravel. Mm. If you were ITV's corporate affairs person, you'd now have this on your list of careful.
It happened in the US. Somebody got shot as a result of one of these confrontations on a US
the
version.
Jenny Jones show.
Jenny Jones, exactly. And there was a massive outcry, as you would imagine, and all these issues were run over. And that's, I think, where Jerry Springer got all his practice at articulating his defence of his show. But what I think happened, and I think it's still the case, is what happened was the ratings just disappeared. Mm. Was that actually people, the viewers, began to feel a bit disgusted with themselves. And in the end, the market has to sort this one out.
OK, have your say on this on the Organ Grinder blog or on our Facebook page, where Alistair Weddle, referring to the Blue Peter cat row, says a cookie is something you have at a party with Angus Deaton and Richard Bacon. Can't think what he's talking about. And Dan Slipper reckons Andy Parfitt had an easy ride last week. On Monday, a new TV channel hits the airwaves. It's called Virgin One, and it's Richard Branson's latest attempt to crack the British TV market. The spat between Virgin Media and BSkyB earlier this year led to Sky removing its channels from Virgin Cable. Virgin One, inevitably, is being seen as a potential rival to Sky One. In typical showman style, Branson bussed up a load of journalists from London to one of his homes, this one was in Oxfordshire, to try and persuade them that Virgin One would be a tremendous success. It didn't all go according to plan, though. We had barely got past Shepherd's Bush before we ran into trouble.
Well, it's not going very well so far. There was an accident on the A40.
horrendous traffic. It's taking just 2 hours just to get to Chiswick. Well, at least we can take some comfort in the knowledge that if we'd taken one of Richard Branson's trains, it would have taken even longer still, probably. Well, we were the first coach to leave and the last to arrive, 3.5 hours later, after a horrendous journey. I hope the experience of watching Sir Richard Branson's new television channel is a little more pleasant. Well, we've been herded into a marquee in what appears to be a very small part of Richard Branson's very large garden, and we're all just waiting for a presentation to start, and presumably for the bearded one to make an appearance.
Please feel free to give a game show style woo to some of the following. I mean, first of all, a fairground! Woo! We have out there more woos, giant hot dogs, woo! Hoopla, woo! An inflatable assault course. Our host today, none other than Sir Richard Branson. First of all, I just wanted to congratulate Johnny and Celia and the whole team. They've put this channel together in months, not years. And I think they've done a magnificent job. Obviously, over the next couple of years, we hope to originate a lot more programming out of the UK. But I think that in the short period of time, they've got a great channel, and I think one that a lot of us here would like to listen into. It's non-conformist, it's mischievous, it's confident, it's straight talking, and it's basically just for lovers of entertainment. So I think what I can safely say is at 9 o'clock on Monday, version one will be born, and I look forward to tuning in, and I just wish you all the best of luck for a bit of success. Thank you very much.
A select group of journalists is getting a personal audience with Sir Richard now at, well, it doesn't look like a huge country pile that we are promised, but it's certainly a fairly impressive mill house with a real-life moat.
Adam Sherwin from The Times. Is the £40 million that you're spending on this channel, is that a better use of the money that you have, do you think, than possibly coming to a deal with Sky over getting the carriage and getting the Sky One and the other channels back?
I think that the figures, if you have a gun held to your head and you give in the first time round, you're likely to get the gun held to your head a second time round. And sometimes you just got to draw a line in the sand, and that's basically what we decided to do. And the competition authorities, as you know, are now trying to decide whether Sky did was anti-competitive or not. We obviously think it was anti-competitive, but we believe the approach was, tantamount to blackmail at the time, and we decided not to give in to it. As a result of that, we've made two specific moves. One is to create this channel, although we were actually planning it even before then, and the other one is to create a really good sports news channel, which will be launched in a couple of months' time.
Matt Wells from The Guardian, you were outmanoeuvred by Sky on the ITV stake. Do you think that doing what you're doing now and the strategy that you've got in place now is enough to outmanoeuvre them?
I think the competition authorities will decide whether we were outmanoeuvred or not. Sky they've got a paper loss of a couple of £100 million on that investment, plus the interest costs on that. They certainly delayed us doing anything with ITV. And again, we'll just have to see what the competition authorities rule. They certainly didn't do it to make money. They did it solely to thwart us. And if the competition authorities make a ruling against them, it could cost them even more money. So, in the meantime, we're getting on and making moves, positive moves like this, which will benefit not only people actually on who subscribe to Virgin Media, but preview. Viewers and actually Sky viewers as well.
Does control of ITV remain a long-term goal for you?
I don't think I can say at the moment because of public company reasons, etc. Watch this space.
So, Steve, are you going to be a viewer on Virgin One Monday night, 9 o'clock?
Almost certainly not. Partly because I don't have...
Are you not in the target demographic?
No, I'm in the target... I'm in the target area. And we've got the wires coming into the house, but in spite of my numerous efforts to become a NTL and subsequently Virgin customer, they've all failed. So I stick with Sky, not out of...
Janine's been trying to leave them. Right? Yeah.
But I tell you what I did do. I saw on the website the promotion for Virgin One, and it said, watch the trailer here. You know, this was the kind of proper telly, I think was the phrase they were using. And when I went to it, I may be mistaken, but I think they were all American imports, and they were certainly second and third grade American imports. And if that works, call me Lars.
Okay.
Do you know, I mean, obviously what we won't do is delve any further into my long and torturous relationship with Virgin.
How's it going, Janine?
private grief. Private grief. However, launching a new channel, to which the strapline may as well be, here's some US shows that other people won't buy because they're too shit and, by the way, they've already been cancelled. It's not the thing that's going to transform my relationship with them,
because we got there late.
Richard Branson, is this a serious attempt now with not just Virgin One, but the whole Virgin Media thing? What's he trying to do?
Well, look, what else can they do? I mean, the fact is that they're on the back foot now because they've lost the Sky channels, which I'm not going to say that they're fantastic, but some people really, really, really like some of those programmes. Mm. My kids will follow some of those programmes wherever they'll go anywhere for them. And other people, you know, so Sky has got, whatever its own issues, Sky has got some real genuine premium content on Sky One and other, which people really, really want to watch.
I've got Virgin.
The problem Virgin have got is they haven't got any of that. It doesn't, this lineup, you know, for all their good intentions, doesn't seem like they've got any now. But what is he trying to do? Well, he's trying to fill the gap. But they talked about having a sports news programme. They've talked about to rival Sky News, Sky Sports News. They've talked about having Virgin One. They've talked about having one or two other things that Sky have got, their own news programming. I mean, this is pie in the sky,
and anyway, Virgin Media is up for sale, and a lot of investors have been circling. And he was asked, Richard Branson was asked if he would continue to license the Virgin brand, and he said yes, he would, and that he'd keep his shares in it. Question is, would the new owner of Virgin Media want the Virgin brand?
Well, that's an interesting question. I have one small tidbit of insider information here, which is that I know that it was firmly in the plans of at least one interested party that the tens of millions of pounds a year that the company was currently paying to use the Virgin name might be an expense that, shall we say, might be saved in the reinvention of the proposition.
And, you know, the reputational damage that the cable industry has done to itself over, 20 years in this country has not been solved by the acquisition of the Virgin brand. And indeed, you know, it's just taken it down.
I think so. In other words, in a nutshell, at least some of the buyers were thinking that the Virgin name was an expensive luxury.
Yeah,
well, particularly if you're in so much debt and trying to turn an ailing company around.
Still, though, it's lovely to know that you had a nice day at the home of Sir Richard Branson.
It wasn't that nice, I tell you. It rained all afternoon and he's a funny guy, isn't he? I just don't understand. What is it with, there's always got to be, you know, dancing girls or fairground attractions. Why can't he just have a normal press launch like anybody else at, you know, Central London Hotel?
Because no one would go.
That's right, no one would go. Thank you very much to Janine Gibson and Steve Hewlett. More on Branson with Gareth McLean next. And Gareth, you displayed a particular aptitude for riding a Bronco.
Yes, thank you, I did. Do you know, my inner thighs are absolutely killing me today.
Thighs of steel, all that cycling, you see?
Thighs of steel, all that, well, yeah. is it the cycling? Yeah, probably.
This, of course, is at the fairground of in Richard Branson's back garden, wasn't it?
Which Sir Richard Branson.
We heard about earlier on, launching his Virgin One channel.
Who knew?
So how long did you keep it up for?
I kept it. Oh, you're funny. Don't you have a sitcom on BBC Three? Oh, no.
Because I actually have talent.
Yes, exactly. La la, the end. Night, night. I kept it up for 58 seconds.
Did you get a prize?
Well, I presume that the certificate of merit is in the post. I don't know.
It was quite funny watching all those beefy straight men clapping and cheering you as you as you held on for dear life.
It was a bit like that scene in The Accused.
Was it really? You had to go moving swiftly on. You did have to go on every single ride.
I did. Well, I had to try them all out, didn't I? I liked it. I think it was good. I had to try every kind of food stuff as well.
I was left holding his man bag, obviously.
Obviously. obviously, and very manly you looked too.
Now listen, we were there because Richard Branson wanted to persuade us of the wares of Virgin One. You've seen some of the programmes that are on.
I have, well, you know, I think, well, some of it looks quite good. I've watched The Riches, which I thought was surprisingly good, and it's quite difficult to make that sort of thing endearing, like endearing for an audience to sort of take to those sort of miscreant characters. Obviously, we have Tony Soprano to thank for that. But yes, The Riches is good. Sarah Connor Chronicles is a bit noisy, but it seems all right.
This is the Terminator.
The Terminator spin-off with Lena Headey, who's from Huddersfield.
Is she really?
Oh, she's from Yorkshire.
Presumably, she's changed her accent especially.
Oh, well, yes. Hey, what are these robots doing here?
That wouldn't have sounded good, would it?
Not so good, in Southern California. yes, and those are good. Although that Penis Envy show.
This is on the first night, actually, on Monday night.
Well, it's about penises. And good God, I have never seen such an array of ugly members.
Really?
Oh, will I say members? I was going to say cocks, but I don't think that's like...
I don't think that's
God,
right.
They were all quite... They showed some at the thing on the screen, big, large, but not so big, large. Like, big, blown up on the screen. They weren't so big themselves.
Right.
God, ugly ones. Really? They really picked a lot of ugly ones.
I'm
to
sure
show.
If they come to you, you could have recommended much.
do you know? It has been said. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, can we move swiftly on from that?
Yes,
as well?
We can. Yes.
That's very good.
So it was a bit of a washout the other day, wasn't it? Mostly.
Well, it was rainy. Yeah. It did take us an age to get there. So although the Venga bus was delayed in traffic. But do you know, God, the thing that I was totally overwhelmed with on the bus was that giant baby. The picture. That giant baby in Russia. Did you see it?
Yes.
It was huge. It was like 2 stone or something when it was born.
Obviously, we had to read the Daily Mail.
Yes, clearly we were reduced to such awful things. And there was a picture of a giant baby born in Russia. Yes. Blah, blah. But then I thought, if you unscrewed that baby, there'd be a smaller baby inside it, and then a smaller baby inside that. Like,
that's just pandering to Russian stereotypes.
I like those little dolls.
Yeah, my granny used to have several of them. Listen, Gareth, will you come back and tell us all about Virgin One after watching it next week?
Ah, yeah, if you like.
Okay, and you've got some photos of that day. Pictures that I took of you on the Bucking Bronco.
Yes, you can see me with my legs in the air.
And,
so attractive.
We'll put them on the Facebook group. That's the end of this week's show. Producer was Matt Hayward. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening. More media talk soon. Goodbye. Guardian Unlimited.